What part of Los Angeles did you live in?
We lived in Claremont.
Oh, really? I thought we'd start out first with when and where you were born and perhaps a little bit about your childhood.
Okay, I was born in Lone Star, Kansas. Only lived there just a year, and then we moved to Nebraska, so of course I don't remember that. It was January 20th, 1922. So my childhood was in Franklin, Nebraska until I was about 11 when we moved to Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about your parents, where they were born? If you know very much about your parents.
I don't know that much about them. My mother was in an orphanage and was adopted out at the age of 11, which is quite old, and it had definitely had a psychological effect on her because her, if it could be called an obsession, was that there were five of us, we children in the family, and she said over and over again, "I just want to raise my children. You know, I don't want to die and leave them an orphan like I was." This was very, very prominent thought in her mind and in her life. My daddy was from a family of people in Kansas, just a farm family. Other than that, I really don't know that much about them because they were middle-aged by the time I came along.
Uh-huh. Do you know why they moved to Nebraska?
My uncle had a farm, and we moved to the farm to run the farm. What the arrangement was, I don't know. Whether it was sharecropping, percentage of the crops, I don't know what the arrangement was. My uncle lived in Lincoln, Nebraska, and was a civil service. I think he worked for the Veterans Administration at a hospital. But my dad and mother operated this little farm. It was a very small farm for him. What they did in Kansas, I don't know. Before my time, they had gone to, well, there are three older children in the family, and they were one right after the other, and my mother got tuberculosis. So they moved from Kansas to Colorado for her help, and she did recover in Colorado Springs. Then they went back to Kansas, and I suppose whatever background they had had was out the window, you know, because of the expense of moving and the illness and all of that. So what they did, what they tried to do in Kansas, I don't know. But I do know then that they went and ran the farm in Franklin for my uncle.
And did they run that same farm up until the time you came to California?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My earliest memories are of that farm, because like I say, I was a year old when they went there. And from then until 11, well, that was my life there on the farm.
You said there were five children?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You were the second to the youngest then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What was the age span among the children?
There were the first three were just a year and a year and a half between them. Then there was 10 years until I came along. Then 3 years until my younger sister was born.
Mm-hmm. So you're the baby of the family for a while then.
Well, I guess for 3 years, uh-huh. Yeah, if it could be called that. Uh-huh.
Okay. Do you remember how large the farm was?
No, it was small. Acreage-wise, I have no idea.
How about extra help? Was it large enough so that occasionally, say, during harvest time, your father might hire extra workers?
No. Harvest time, all I remember is the big harvesting machines coming in and doing whatever it is they do at harvest time, and my mother cooking for them and feeding them all. But as far as having a hired hand, per se, no, I don't think we ever did.
And did your older brothers and sisters help your father there?
No. The oldest boy in the family, when he was a teenager, started running away from home, which he did regularly every year. And so he was more interested in some things than helping out at home. Then the next was a girl, and she taught school. got her degree. I think she went to a university in Lincoln and taught school, helped the family financially. Then the third child was a boy. Out of high school, he went to work for the little bank and helped the family financially until the pasture looked greener in California. And then he came out ahead of the family. Probably the influence of the oldest boy, because amongst his years of running away and coming home and being a cowboy in Colorado, and at one point he joined the Navy, so that took care of that for 4 years. So he was in California, and that's, I suppose, was the first family contact with California, because of the glowing letters he wrote home, you know, about it. So that then the other boy was wooed and lured to California, and then the rest of us came out.
So it sounds as though your father was the one who was doing just about all of the work.
Yes.
On the farm.
Mm-hmm.
When you were old enough to help out a little bit, did you have some chores that you did?
I don't think so. I remember being in the garden with my mother. She had a huge garden. I suppose I probably picked apples and pulled weeds. I remember picking tomatoes. Have you ever picked tomatoes? The plant just makes you just itch like crazy. It touches your skin. I remember that. I don't remember any routine chores that I had. I think it was just a general help where, you know, where and when needed, actually. But it was never a burden.
Did your mother work in the fields when your father needed help?
No, she didn't work in the fields. As I remember, always was in the garden or in the orchard or in the house, this type of thing. She never worked in the fields.
Did you have livestock, say?
Yes.
Pigs or chickens or something like that?
Chickens, pigs, cows, horses. And a couple of dogs. That's all I can remember. We didn't have sheep or any of the fun things like turkeys or ducks or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Were most of your contacts with other people, say children in school, were they also children of farmers?
Yes, they were.
Was it a country school that you went to?
Little red one-room schoolhouse on the hill. Had a great big wood stove in the back of the room. I think there were probably 8 grades. There couldn't have been very many of us, maybe 2 or 3 youngsters in each grade. And the kind, you know, the first thing in the morning, the first grade would go up to the benches up in the front and recite their lessons, and then the second grade would do theirs, and this type of thing through the day. A very pleasant memory.
Mm-hmm. You liked to go to school then?
Yes. My memory of it is very... My memory of my childhood is pleasant. It's not... I can't say, like a lot of people say, oh, I had a wonderful childhood. I don't feel that way about it, but I don't feel any pain either. I didn't realize until, in retrospect, how poor we were. Somehow or other, my parents were able to shield us from anything like that.
They never discussed finances?
No.
In front of you?
No. The only thing about finances I can remember is right inside of our door on the wall we had, it was like a hook. We had a little hook thing on the wall. And we charged the groceries at the little grocery store, which was grocery store and shoes and knickknacks and all this type of thing, you know, and the Cracker Barrel and the Pickle Barrel. And our grocery tags were always hung on that little metal hook until, I suppose, when the crops were in. And I can remember my folks taking that down and figuring up how much we owed at the store. But as far as we were never hungry. We were never ragged. I suppose I was just like most of the families around there. There was, I remember the professional people in town who were spoken of perhaps not very kindly. Mr. So-and-so who has the meat market and charges outrageous prices and lets his little girl who was in my class go to school in the winter time without any long underwear on, and it's a wonder she didn't catch her death. In other words, there was the division there of the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. My folks, I don't think meant to be malicious, but it's just like perhaps I would speak about Rockefeller and all his money with that tone of voice. Mm-hmm. And these were things that I remember, and wondering why the little girl didn't catch her death of pneumonia because she didn't wear that long underwear that we had to pull down, uh-huh, fold over like this, then pull our long stockings up like this over it, and we hated it.
Did you always remember then having the necessities?
Yes.
Did you have very many extras occasionally?
No. Our extras were on Saturday night, like everybody else, we would go to town, and the old cars parked along on the street, and the women would visit, two or three of them would get together in one car and visit, and the men were out on the street corner visiting, and we kids would go in the drugstore, which was also the ice cream parlor, and he had little penny suckers, all day suckers, and this was our treat. We got our Saturday night penny lollipops, and that was about the extent of it. Mm-hmm. I do remember that the reason I remember this perhaps is I had been absent from school. I had been sick, and the next day when I went back to school, the teacher said, I'm going to loan you a dime because we have, it was an assembly, and I think it was Shakespearean actors, which now as I look back was entirely over the head of grammar school youngsters. But anyway, occasionally, a magician or odds and ends would come and present a program in the auditorium at school. And we were charged a dime to go see that. And this one teacher, because I had been out of school before, I didn't bring my dime. So she loaned me a dime so I could go to the assembly. And then I remember my daddy the next day gave me a dime to take and give to the teacher. And that was about as much as was ever actually spent on us in the way of extracurricular things.
Mm-hmm. But you don't seem to think you were really deprived at that time. Looking back on it, you might say we were very poor, but at the time, you didn't seem to think you were.
No, I didn't.
Most of the other children were in the same situation you were in.
Yes, now I was going to tell you the one thing that had a very strong influence on me. One of our friends who had a more prosperous farm than ours, their little boy, who was just a year younger than I, got a tricycle. And I wanted a tricycle the worst way. I would have given both legs for a tricycle. And that has stayed with me, and I have never forgotten that. And if a child makes a vow, it would be like, you know, I'd say, you know, my children will never be deprived of a tricycle. And that did have an influence on me. And that is one thing that I remember, how passionately I wanted a tricycle. And of course, didn't ever get one. We couldn't afford it. But when we have two children, and when they were each old enough to have a tricycle, they had a tricycle. When they were old enough to have a bicycle, they each had bicycles. And when they were old enough at 16 to have cars, they each got a car, which is, I think, is a direct result of me being deprived of those toys, that toy that I wanted so passionately. The only other thing that I remember that left a poverty mark on me was that if one of the youngsters in my class at school would have a birthday party, and we'd get an invitation, and I'd take the invitation home, and my mother would say, "Oh, not another present." And so I got to the point where when I'd get an invitation, I wouldn't tell my mother, and I just wouldn't go to the party, because I didn't want to hear that and feel that, which was a feel of poverty. And I think now back that, of course, there was a little newspaper that was published once a week. Well, of course, they always said so-and-so had a party and those invited were so-and-so and so-and-so. And I think my poor mother must have thought, my poor little Elizabeth, she's not popular. She never gets invited to these parties. But those are the two outstanding things that have stayed with me and probably have influenced my life down through the years. But other than that, I didn't feel the pinch of being terribly poor.
Uh-huh. Did your family place a lot of emphasis on religion?
Yes.
Did you go to church?
Yes. Every Sunday night. Mm-hmm.
What religion was that, if I can
ask? My parents were Church of the Brethren, which are called the Dunkards. However, in the little town, there was just the Methodist Church and the Congregational Church. We went to the Methodist Church. And my three older, the siblings that are three that are older than I, each one of them, when they got to into their teenage, where the rebellion age starts, they left the Methodist Church and they went to the Congregational Church. And as looking at it now in retrospect, it was not a matter of what one teaches or what the other one teaches, because I'm sure they were very, very similar. They were both Protestant churches. But it was just that I'm exerting myself, and I'm not going to that church anymore. I'm going to pick this church, and I'm going to this church now.
Mm-hmm. But your parents, did they encourage you to go to church to begin with, or was it something you had to do?
We had to. Mm-hmm. That was just a matter of, we just did. It never crossed our minds not to.
Mm-hmm. Did you continue going to church later on in your life?
Until I had my own family, I was in and out and in and out and in and out of a study of all the religions. And I am now either an agnostic or an atheist, whatever phraseology you want to use on it. I tend to be more agnostic than atheist, although at a time I was declaring I was an atheist, but I've tempered that a little bit as I've grown older.
Did the church you went to have a lot of special events? Some churches have pie suppers or dances.
No dancing. That was definitely a taboo. On Sunday, you just didn't do anything but to sit around and rest and cook big dinners. If the rodeo came to town, if it was on Sunday, we couldn't ever go. No, there wasn't much except the church suppers, and now I don't know what the occasion would have been for those. If a visiting minister was there, why all the ladies brought their dishes, and we had a church supper. I do remember the country schoolhouse. They had what they called the box suppers, where the young people would take, I wasn't old enough to participate in this, but I remember my sister, and they'd pack, and they'd bake cake, and make just like a little meal, put it in a box, say a shoe box, and decorate it as if it were a gift. Pretty paper and ribbons, whatever they could find that would be attractive. Go to the schoolhouse on a specified night, and all the young ladies did this. And then there was an auctioneer, And he would stand up and he'd hold this box up. What am I bid for this box? And the young men would bid on the boxes. And whoever bid the most, this was a way of raising money. It was at the schoolhouse, so I suppose it was for the school and not connected with the church. And of course, usually they knew which girl had decorated the box, so of course the fellow who was sweet on her would outbid the rest of them. Then he'd get the box, and then and the young lady who had prepared it, then they could go off and sit in a corner of the room and they'd eat that supper. So that was called the box suppers. That was a fun time.
Uh-huh. Were there many other social events?
No.
It was mostly work.
Yes. Uh-huh. Looking back, yeah.
If you did have some leisure time in the evenings or on Sundays, do you remember what you did?
My mother always wrote a letter on Sunday to my one runaway brother. And then when my other brother left home, Sunday was always the day for her to write them a letter, which she did not like to do. But we kids just played. And of course in the evening, it was pretty much shortly after the sun went down and supper was over, then it was time to go to bed. I don't remember that we, wait a minute. The folks played cards. Their favorite card game was Rook. And especially in the winter time when they couldn't be outside and the days were short, why, a neighbor couple would come over and they would play cards. Sometimes just a group of four men would play cards, and I can remember getting up in the morning. This would be in the winter when they didn't have field work to do, and getting up in the morning, and my daddy and three other of the neighbor farmers would still be sitting at the kitchen table playing cards. They would have played Rook all night long. The women rarely played that much, but the couples would play some cards, but the men liked to do it. I suppose they figured it was quite daring to stay up and play all night long.
And since you did have neighbors who were also farmers, did they help each other? Say if one had an unusual amount of work to do, would they help that man and then at another time return?
I believe so, only I don't think it was, it wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't anything that was exchanged on a regular basis that I recall. Mm-hmm. If there were an emergency or an unusual circumstance, I'm sure they did, because my recollection is that we were on friendly terms with all our neighbors and a helping attitude.
Was there much more of a community atmosphere there? Where you knew everybody who lived around you and everyone in your town, and people would help one another out, than there was when you moved to California?
Oh, yes. Very definitely. Mm-hmm. When we moved to California, then we were aliens in an alien land until we learned our way around. And, of course, when we came to Bakersfield, my father had no trade. So here again, it was the older children in the family who helped financially.
Mm-hmm. When you were in Nebraska, several people have told me that during the Depression, while you might have had enough food, maybe even enough to take to market and sell, that there was no cash, there was no money to be had. And that a lot of times that meant they had to resort to bartering, to trading, say, some eggs for some meat or whatever. Do you remember any of that going on?
Not on large scale. We did our own butchering. We had our own meat and eggs and milk. I don't remember that we had an excess old garden supply that we bartered with. My mother canned all the produce. No, I don't recall that, anything like that. But I also don't recall seeing any dollar bills floating around either, so maybe this went on and it was just something that was a part of my life that made no particular impression on me.
The house that you lived in, could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. A big wood stove in the kitchen. And in the wintertime, when I'd come home from school, there was the very pungent odor of woolen blankets strung around on the backs of the chairs by the stove, drying on wash day. The weather was bad, my mother would wash and have to bring them in and dry them. And it was the smell of wool drying, which is a very pungent odor. I'm sorry, I got lost. What was your original? All right, okay. That was the kitchen, then there was the front room, where our dining table was in there rather than in the kitchen, although my mother did have a what we would call a drain board, a little work area. We had water in the house from a pump, but no bathroom facilities. It was a little outside privy. There was 4 bedrooms. It was on what didn't have an upstairs. 4 bedrooms, of which we used 3. The 4th one was what we called the north room, and it was shut off from the rest of the house. And in the wintertime, deadly cold. In there we had the milk separator. And I don't know what else they used it for. They did store food in there because we didn't have a smokehouse or anything like that. So they apparently it was just like a cold storage room in the wintertime. Other than that, that's about all I remember about the house.
Do you remember being comfortable in the house?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a big pot-bellied stove in the front room. And it was not an unpleasant house. It was, now as I look back, it must have been awfully old and shacky, run down. But we never had junk laying around. My father was always careful. We didn't have old farm machinery or old junky stuff laying around. He kept the place policed up so that, though poor, it had a nice appearance at least.
Mm-hmm. You weren't very old when the Depression began. Do you have very many memories of the Depression, of when it hit, or perhaps your parents discussing how times were becoming increasingly difficult?
When was Theodore Roosevelt, not Theodore, Franklin Delano Roosevelt elected? What year was he elected?
32, and he took office in 33.
I remember that Hoover got blamed for the Depression. Mm-hmm. But my folks said, well, they were going to vote for him anyway, because they weren't going to have that Roosevelt in there, because he was going to make whiskey legal, and that would be the end of morality. And so they would not vote for him. The irony of it is that after we had come to California, my father was forced to work on Roosevelt's WPA program. So, although he didn't vote for the man provided his livelihood in later years. But no, I don't remember any talk of what are we going to do, or times are really getting bad. I don't recall that.
How about outward appearances? Did you still seem to have enough food, enough clothing?
Yes,
That sort of thing.
Now, of course, buy enough clothing meant that, not a closet full by any means, but my mother, as I look back now, must have done an awful lot of washing, because I'm sure we didn't have you know, but just a few change of clothing, but we always had clean clothes. Every morning we put on clean clothes. So that I suppose what little bit we had, she kept mended and washed so that we didn't feel deprived of enough clothing. And we were, always had coats. And frankly, I don't know how they managed.
But the drought did affect Nebraska very much so, didn't it?
Yes.
Did your father ever talk about this, or was it just obvious to you?
You mean, are you asking after we left or
no,
while we were there?
While you were there.
While we were there, yes.
And the weather.
Okay.
Really,
yes. Never. No, that's one reason that they could never make ends meet. It was always too hot, too cold, too dry, and never too wet. Insect, locusts. That's the only insect that I can remember that was really detrimental to our crops was the locust. Hail, of course, often just stripped the wheat or whatever. And there was always, when it was time to harvest the wheat, it was always with an eye on the sky to hurry and get it in before the rains came or the hails came or something came to ruin the crop. But as I recall, it was almost as if the cosmos was kind of kick us out of the area because it, like you say, for years it wasn't conducive to prosperous farming in any way.
Did your father use the horse and plow?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We were never mechanized.
In the area?
No. I don't remember anybody that was mechanized.
Do you know much about the way the farmer used his land? Some people have said that most farmers didn't practice crop rotation or any of the other more sophisticated farming methods to conserve the land so that you could get some good crops out of it.
I don't know that crop rotation had even was even advanced that long ago. If so, we either didn't know about it or it was a newfangled thing that somebody up in the university had come out with. But I remember the cornfield was always the cornfield and the alfalfa field was always the alfalfa and the wheat was always the wheat in the same place. There was never crop rotation or of course, we couldn't let the land lie. You had to plant every year, you know, to have a... Or we certainly would have starved to death. But no crop rotation or preservation. No fertilizing that I know of.
So it's quite possible that part of the problem was with very unsophisticated farming methods at that time.
Definitely. Probably farming like my grandparents farmed, you know. Certainly no progress or advancement.
Did you ever hear anything about some programs that President Roosevelt had? One of them was he paid farmers to shoot their cattle and pigs so that the market price of those would rise. Do you ever hear anything about that?
Vaguely. Nothing that I could say specifically. Just an uneasy feeling when you mentioned it. I just had an uneasy feeling that something like that was going on, but what it was, I don't know.
How about another program he had where he paid the farmers to either plow under their crops or not plant at all?
Yes, I had heard about that, but I think it was not, in our area, it was not prevalent, probably because the farms were all too small.
Mm-hmm. But you had heard of it.
I had heard of that, yeah. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not confusing something I heard afterwards with it, putting it into my childhood memory. Mm-hmm. But I am vague on it.
Mm-hmm. And when you left in 1934, was there any one thing that just sort of like the straw to break the camel's back that just made you decide to leave?
Probably. My father ran for county sheriff. The county sheriff was a friend of ours. He was actually a shirt tail relative. And my father used to like to go with him when he'd try to round up the bootleggers or chase the bad guys and this type of thing. This was for my father, was probably about the only diversion pleasantry that he had in his life. Once a year when we had the county fair, they'd have automobile races. And the sheriff liked to drive in these races each year. One year he had an accident with his car on the racetrack, and it killed him. And there was a lot of talk about, now you'd call it the mafia did him in, but we didn't call it that then, but it was whispered that he was after, I don't know, it was a bootlegger or somebody that was on the other side of the law. And there was just talk that he possibly was shot as he was running the race. Well, of course, as far as I know, there was no coroner in the town. I mean, you know, so Cliff was dead, so, you know, he died in the accident, and then they buried him. No, there was no investigation into it. Anyway, I'm getting away from my story. My father, because he liked the thrill of that life and was a good friend of Cliff's, campaigned to be elected sheriff and lost the election. And so although I don't remember them saying now's the time to move to California, some way or other they meshed together now that you've asked me. I expect that was
sometime soon after that.
Yes, I expect that was just probably the final, as you say, the final straw. Uh-huh. He just thought,
because
you know,
his farming was not successful enough.
Not at all. And then,
family.
Right. And then he had hoped to win this election and be the sheriff, and then he wasn't that popular, and I expect it just about broke his heart. Mm-hmm. He was a man of, he had a great potential had he not had to just work his life out, you know. He was a smart man. Perhaps not. He didn't break out of the mold and do something else, but he did have the potential, and he could have had he not been saddled with a family of five. And yes,
another place, another time.
Right, right.
When you decided to leave Nebraska, was there any question about where you'd go? Was it always California, or did you consider going other places?
No, it was always California. My the third child, the brother, who was 10 years older than I, had come to California and went to work in, there was a Cress Five and Dime store in Bakersfield at that time.
Still is.
Is there? My uncle managed Cress, and so he offered my brother a job. And so my brother came out and went to work there. And he was the one who had worked in the bank and always helped the family financially
really to almost to the detriment of himself. As I recall, he always brought his pay envelope home and gave it to the folks, and you know, really spent very little on himself. That I know about, had a date occasionally, I guess, with the girls, but so he urged the family to move out. And
he wrote letters home.
Yeah, because he was sending money.
California was?
Yes, and he was sending money home back to Nebraska. And he just said, why don't you come out? You know, you're just getting dug into a hole deeper and deeper back there. And he was just a young man, just, oh, probably maybe about 20 or such a man at the time. Well, if I was 11, he was 21, okay. He urged us to come out, which is why we came to California, because he had a job and he was contributing. However, that meant that my older sister, who was teaching school in Nebraska and was also contributing, she came with us. She didn't ever get her teaching credentials out here, so that income was cut off. But my daddy was able to pick up a job here and there and the other place, and eventually he did get a job a number of years later, because we left Bakersfield, went to San Diego, and then he came back to Bakersfield, always trying to find permanent work. In the meantime, working on the WPA.
When your brother wrote these letters home, do you remember anything specific that he said that was so great about California?
The climate? All the things we brag about, you know. Mm-hmm. Only in those days, plenty of food. The citrus of, you know, I mean, we had no oranges. We did grow grapes back there, but not, you know, they weren't sold for 10, 15 cents for a bucket of them like the glowing terms were. The letters he wrote back, and he didn't exaggerate. The comparison between the two was just like the difference between Asia and, you know, South America. There was really that much difference. It was just like an entirely different world.
Mm-hmm. Did people in Nebraska talk about California? Were there any rumors that you had heard among your friends or other townspeople that were also perhaps considering coming to California?
One family came to California, but before we came out, they came back. I don't remember what the father's occupation was. I don't know why they came back, but there was a boy my age, and he always spoke of it. It was a great thing, you know, when we were in California and we'd go down to L.A. and, you know, talk about it. And we thought that was ridiculous that he didn't say Los Angeles, you know. But it had been a great adventure for him, and he was, I won't say we really looked up to him. We laughed at him because he was such a braggart. But we were envious of him because he'd been to California. But like I say, I don't know why the family came back. I suppose they couldn't. They couldn't make it in California. I don't really know. But other than that, no. I don't remember people even talking about, let's go someplace else and do something. It was really quite...
Uh-huh. It was unusual for you to leave.
Yes, it was. Yes, at that time it was unusual for us to leave. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember if you had any expectations of what California would be like? Whether you expected a great deal more than there really was here, or whether you were pleasantly surprised?
No, I think we expected much more. I think it's human nature that you take your problems with you. You can't blame everything on the climate. And I think my father was bitterly disappointed that he couldn't just get a job and provide for his family. I think for my mother it was fine, because she was relieved at the drudgery of a farm wife. And she had the house to take care of, you know, but we lived, you know, on a lot like everybody else in a house like this. And so it wasn't the 24 hours of just toil. So I think for her, it was a utopia, even though there still wasn't enough money. For myself, no, I don't recall. At 11, it was just a new school, the dread of a new school, and this type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Was it an adventure for you at all?
I think it was. Yes. And the trip out was exciting. And
could you tell me a little bit about that? First, I guess you probably had to sell the things that you had.
We sold. Yes, we sold everything at a public auction for just whatever we could get. And of course, I have no idea how much cash we had, but everything that we had was, you know, we brought with us. It was from the sale of poor furniture and household items. We had my brother, who had come to California and who wrote for us, had a car, an old Chevy. I don't remember what year it was, which he had left when he went to California. We had a car that was called a Whippet, my folks. So we had the two cars. We came to California. My brother's boyfriend that he had left behind in Nebraska came out with us to drive my brother's car. And along the way, we would stop at, well, they didn't call them motels. I don't know what they called them now, but that's what they were. But they were
cabins.
Yes. And we carried our own bedding, and enough dishes to cook with, and our food, so that it was just a little place, you know, with a mattress and a little. I suppose it was like a little kitchenette. Had a stove of some kind, but when we would stop at these places, it was take in the bedding, take in the pots and pans, take in the food and this type of thing. My mother was so afraid that we would get bed bugs. That was, to her, would have been worse than getting syphilis or gonorrhea, because that was just the poor white trash had bed bugs, you know, in Nebraska. We never had them. But that was always a fear, you know, that you'd get a bed bug. So she was just panic-stricken until we finally got to California, because it was putting her blankets on those mattresses where other people had put their bedding. Well, we never did pick up any bed bugs, but that, to her, it was a real traumatic thing to have to put her bedding where someone else had put their bedding. The trip was, I don't remember how long it took, several days, of course. I remember to my father, it was, now as I look back, it was a happy time for him, because he thought he was going, you know, to a new and a better life. The trip itself was a drag on my mother, and of course we kids were like kids are when you travel, you know, you get bored and this type mm-hmm. of thing. But it wasn't particularly unpleasant. It was just a long, long trip.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how much money your father had with him?
I couldn't venture a guess. It couldn't have been very much. I would say less than $1,000, mm-hmm. surely.
But it was enough for you to pay for rental on these tourist cabins.
Yes.
Which was a lot more than some people had.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see any people camped out alongside the road on your way out? Now, you would have taken a more northern route.
We came through.
Which place did you come from?
Through Colorado. Oh, my. Let's see, through Colorado. Yeah, we weren't on the desert route. Northern New Mexico, Santa Fe. I don't know what highway that would have been. I just can't tell you. I don't remember, as a child, I don't remember seeing any people camp out, no.
When you came into the border of California, was that through the Arizona border or Nevada? Or?
It must have been Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about the border coming over, whether you were stopped? Inspected?
Yes, we were inspected. I'm trying to remember if we had to leave anything. I can't remember if we had to leave anything, but I know that... no, we didn't. But I do remember that there were some people there who... They were... the inspectors or somebody was burning some of their bedding. Why, I don't know. But I... Now that you brought it to my mind, I can remember my mother saying how sad. Those people didn't have hardly anything in there. They were destroying some of their property, whether it was, you know, infected with some kind of a vermin or something. I have no idea. But they did. We did have to open out all our stuff. We did not travel like the proverbial Okies because we had nothing on top of our car. We had a little trailer that was hitched behind one of the cars, and we had all our stuff packed in that trailer, so we made a nice compact little package.
Did you have any furniture?
No, we brought no furniture. We just personal items.
Just the necessities.
And the necessities, right.
And the cars were not very crowded there, since you had two cars with only, what, your parents?
My older sister and my brother's boyfriend rode in the one car, and then my younger sister and I and my parents were in the...
So we were not crowded?
No, we weren't crowded.
16 people in the chicken?
No.
When you first came into California, where did you go? Was it directly to Bakersfield?
Yes. What street we lived on now. But right, my brother had rented the... when he came out and was working at Cress, he had taken a room in a home, a widow woman and her daughter and granddaughter. And then when we were coming out, he had rented a house just across the street from where he had this rented room, and he had the house rented for us. And he ended up by marrying the daughter where he had rented the room.
So he had a house already for you, which was quite nice.
Yes,
so
really.
And so then I suppose your father and your... was your other brother with you then?
No, he was off running around.
So your father... went out looking for work?
Yes.
And what happened with that? You said he had great difficulty.
I don't remember that he... I don't remember any specific job that he ever had. I think he did just day labor and odd jobs, what he could find, when he could find them. Most of the time he didn't work. He didn't have work.
Mm-hmm. Was he looking for field work or just anything?
Just anything. He would have... he wasn't a shirker. He would have done anything, any odd jobs, and did anything that he could find that anybody had the money to hire him to do.
He had a car, so
yes.
He probably drove out to the fields to look for work.
It's possible, although I don't remember that he did. In Bakersfield. For one thing, I remember that we had... the heat was quite an assault on us. Although it gets hot in Nebraska, I remember that there was we had to acclimatize to it. So this in itself might have prevented him from going out into the fields, you know, looking for work. I don't know. And
he
I
came
don't
out in the middle of summer then.
It was in the end of summer because we started school in September. Mm-hmm. I think I went to Emerson Junior High School. I think it was.
How long did you stay in that house that your brother had rented for you?
We probably stayed there for a year, and then we went to San Diego.
Could you describe that house to me, what it was like?
It had three bedrooms in a line, a front room, a dining kitchen room, and a back porch, and a bath. A very small, compact little house.
Could you compare it to the house you had grown up in Nebraska?
Newer, later, you know, built. It was a newer house. It wasn't a new house, but it wasn't old. It was just like a low-income city house that you see around town.
Did you feel it was a step down from the house you had lived in
No.
before?
No, huh? No, because the farmhouse was just an old farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the old farmhouse was ever, don't remember it ever being painted or anything like that, you know. Probably just weathered wood. But no, this was a townhouse, and it was a nice house, nicer than the farmhouse that we had lived in. It was, in spite of my daddy not being able to get work, it was a step up for us because it was out of the rut, I suppose, you know, that just keeps pulling you down, and was
Something
a new
to look forward to.
Yes, and
And then you started school then.
Yes, I went to Emerson. I think it was Emerson Junior High School, but because my daddy wasn't able to get steady work, then we went to San Diego. And my older brother, the one who was in the Navy, was living in San Diego at the time. That's where he settled after he got out of the service. So we went down there, and it was along about then that Roosevelt was instituting the WPA, and my father was able to get on that.
In San Diego?
Yes, in San Diego, and used to have to take the ferry out to Long Island. North Island, I guess was the name of it. And however the income was, it was supplemented by whatever type of welfare program there was then, and I don't remember what it was called.
They usually called it relief.
I guess that's what it was,
and
in relief.
You could get what they call commodities, which would be equivalent to our food stamps, where you could go in and they would give you some staples. Is that what you had?
I think they brought food to us,
they
I think, is what
that.
They did. And I know they brought, I remember one time that they brought some, like kitchen towels, just very cheap. They were probably a flour sack, kitchen towels. But my mother never got over taking charity. It was the most devastating thing to her. After the joy and the hopes of leaving, you know, the poverty of the farm and coming to a new life, and then finding out that things were no better money wise, and as a matter of fact were worse, that they had to go on relief. And yes, you're right, that is the phrase that was used. And whenever the worker would come around, and I suppose they're not much different now than they were then, but they were always came with a I am God attitude. And it was bad enough to have to be on relief without being treated like dirt, which is what they did. Now see, I was just a young teenager then, but I was mortified seeing it reflected in my mother's face. But they had to have the help, you know.
How long did this go on?
Probably a matter of about maybe as much as 4 years.
That you stayed in San Diego?
Mm-hmm.
From about 1935 to about 1939 then?
Whatever the years were. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because in 39 I graduated from high school. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did this do to your father? If your mother was extremely upset, he must have been at least dad.
Yes. As a matter of fact, he tended to be, well, when the, whatever the relief worker was that came around, they call them caseworkers now, I don't know what they called them then. He was always just angry. I suppose the accumulation of anger, he never made a scene, but as soon as the worker would leave, then he would just explode, not at us, but you know, just the frustration. You know, and it was always anger with him, and with mother, it was mortification. And I think about 4 years. But we had, again, apparently we had enough to eat. I don't ever remember being hungry.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what your father did on WPA? Perhaps it was a series of jobs wherever they needed him.
I think they were doing, I don't know whether it was land leveling or whatever it was they were doing on, and I think it's North Island, and I can't remember if that's the name of it, but it's the naval base down there in the bay,
mm-hmm.
in San Diego, and they were doing, it was work for the Navy on the airstrip. There. Now, what he actually did was probably pick and shovel work, was
mm-hmm.
probably what it was.
He was not excited by the work he did then. He didn't find it
no,
challenging
and
or a job that he would have chosen.
Not by any means, no. It was a matter of bread and butter. And we lived in, we didn't actually live in San Diego, we lived in Pacific Beach, which is across the bay, and or around the bay. And so it was a long commute. For him, he had to go to San Diego and catch the ferry and go out to North Island and do the job and then back and all the way back home.
And you were living on Pacific Beach then?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And do you remember the house you lived in there?
Yes. Was an old store building. That was had been converted into living a house. It was I could have bay the main part across the front with a big wide porch. It apparently was an old store building, and across the front was the room which would have been the main. A room of the store, and then with the living quarters in the back, but it had all been turned into a house. Part of the time while we were living there, my brother, who was the oldest in the family, the Navy man, grew dahlias, had a big flower. Now you'd call it a nursery. But he just specialized just in the flowers, and my father helped him with this little flower ranch. And he would go out, sometimes my father would go, sometimes my sister-in-law, my brother was married at the time, would take the flowers out and peddle them just door to door over in Loma Linda and some of the nicer areas around San Diego. So that was source of income there that helped. Now let's see, where were we? Okay, about the house. It was just a a house, and by then I was old enough that I was very much embarrassed and ashamed to be living in an old store building rather than a nice house. Mm-hmm. So I was in high school, and I apparently inherited a lot of pride. During my high school years, I was aware of being poor and ashamed of being poor, which had a bearing on my social life, because I was hesitant to ask anyone to come to my house because I lived in an old store building. So I'm sure that had a bearing on my adult outlook on life. Although I've come to terms with life now after all these years.
Mm-hmm. But at that time, you feel this was probably, you were sensitive to this. Other children, or excuse me, other high school students weren't cruel to you or teasing you about.
No.
This was just your own.
This was within me, yes. And I suppose maybe the years of poverty, when I didn't know we were poor, somehow just it came to my awareness when I was a teenager that, my goodness, we're poor. You know, we've been poor all our life, and I was ashamed of it. And no one ever said anything. I did have friends. I had close friends, but I was very careful and very selective. Mm-hmm. I would lots of times meet my friends. I will meet you so-and-so place, rather than have them come to my home, which is sad now as I look back, but it's a way of youth.
Did you know other kids that were in situations similar to yours?
Yes. My number one girlfriend, her folks were on relief, and she was as proud as I, because I didn't know it for 2 or 3 years that she was. Mm-hmm. And we both, in high school, there was some kind of a work program through high school, perhaps similar to what they have now, I don't really know, but through you could work in the office and earn a little bit of money. And when that came to our high school, which was La Jolla High School, we lived in Pacific Beach, and we caught the bus and went to high school, La Jolla High School. And when it was made known at high school that there were work hours available, I made application, and my girlfriend did too. And I said, well, what are you doing that for? And then it came out that her folks were on relief too, so she had been just as embarrassed about it as I. But as for anyone ever ridiculing me, no. The embarrassment was all within myself. Mm-hmm. And how many people know, I don't know, but certainly a lot more than I was aware did. Mm-hmm. Those things are not, you know, those things are just known.
You were from Nebraska. You said something about you didn't like being grouped with the Okies. Can you remember a time when you were?
No.
Did this ever come up? Or were you thinking that because you were on relief, you might be associated with them?
Yes, because we were from the Midwest and on relief, yes. But we set ourselves apart because my mother was scrupulously clean, like I told you about the bed bugs. Mm-hmm. And in our minds, the Okies were dirty and lacking in morals. Now, this was an objective view, of course, because we weren't, we didn't have any friends amongst them, and I'm sure we did them a disservice in our minds. Mm-hmm. But there was that distinction. And they also were followed the crops.
Migrants.
Mm-hmm. Which we didn't. We might have been better off had we done so, you know. So there was just, we were a step above them mm-hmm. in our own minds.
When you were in Bakersfield that one year, 1934 to 1935, do you remember meeting a lot of other kids who were from Oklahoma,
no.
Texas, who might have been called Okies?
No.
It was a little bit before the big influx.
Yes. My first-hand acquaintance with the Okies was after I graduated from La Jolla High School in 1939. Then I came back up to Bakersfield where my brother, the one who had come out here originally, was still living and is still living there today. He'd be 70 years old now, in a couple of months. I came and stayed with them and worked at a bank in Oildale, and this was where I had acquaintance with the Okies. They'd come in and ask for loans and this type of thing. So this was on a one-to-one basis. I never went out to the migrant camps or anything like that, but I was in the loan department at the bank, and I knew what their financial situation was and wasn't. And they would come and ask for loans, and of course there was no way that the bank would loan them money. But that was mostly the contact that I had with them.
And the first time in 34, did you ever see any ditch camps where Okies had thrown up tents or shacks beside the road or under bridges, beside rivers?
I don't think so, no. The only place where I knew that Okies were was out around Arvin, Cottonwood, out in that area.
Mm-hmm. But the first time you hadn't had much contact with them?
No.
Wasn't until you came back?
Yeah, right.
Which mm-hmm. was about what,
1930? Yeah, I graduated in 39 in June, and then I guess about 1940, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then my folks came back to Bakersfield. And my father then got permanent work. He went to work for an agricultural pump, Wentworth Pump Company, and then worked until he retired. Or I should say he quit. He was old enough to be on Social Security, and my mother contacted leukemia and died, and so my father just quit work and just drew Social Security.
What year
was that? Oh, it must have been, let's see, this is about 1950 when my mother died. Mm-hmm. But I lived in Bakersfield and then worked there at the bank. Then met my husband in Bakersfield, and we were married there.
Mm-hmm. In 35, and then again when you came back to Bakersfield, although your father wasn't working out in the fields that time, did you have any knowledge of the people who were working in the fields? Any friends of the family or parents of
no.
school children?
No. In my mind, no contact at all with the agricultural community at all.
So you probably didn't know about anything going on there?
No. Mm-mm.
What sort of work they did or
no.
how they were treated?
No, I surely don't.
Do you think that very many of the Okies took government aid from what you could gather? You said that that's how you felt you might be associated with them, was because you were from the Midwest and taking aid. Do you think very many of them really did take aid?
In looking back, I can't think of a specific instance that I knew of at all.
Mm-hmm. But you had the stereotype in your mind?
Yes, yes, in my mind. But like I say, in looking back, it seemed like they just made do. You know, they arrived in all in one car, and they harvested the grapes, and then they moved on up the state to harvest whatever was there, and if any of them became ill, why, they went to some public agency, I think, although I don't know. But as for actually being on a relief roll where they received a check or any kind of regular assistance, I have no knowledge of that at all. And I'm inclined to think that they didn't, but I'm only speaking from the outside. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned health, I wonder, did your family have any health problems during this time that you were on relief in the late 30s?
No, we were very, in view of the fact now where we think everything is stress-related, how they could have helped, you know, but be ill. But except for, as I said, when my mother had three little children, boom, 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 and was ill, and mm-hmm. which was before my time, but she did recover. But perhaps the fact that we lived on the farm and we had the food that we had was fresh and wholesome.
How about when you came to California? Was there a great change in your diet?
Probably there was, although I don't... when I think about what we ate at home, I remember all the things in season, the garden things in season, and a lot of... just farm products. Now, when we came to California and lived in Bakersfield, it seems to me that we had potatoes and eggs and eggs and potatoes and potatoes and eggs around the clock. I don't remember. And of course, grapes. That's one reason we came to California, was to get some of those good grapes. We had the grapes. But and oranges, of course, they were always plentiful. But as for the, we probably didn't have nearly as much of the green produce as we had when we lived on the farm. And of course, my mother didn't can, and so it was just a.
You probably didn't have quite as healthy a diet as you.
Right. It was just a day to day, whatever was cheapest. In season, you know,
mm-hmm.
type of thing.
One thing that can separate the quote-unquote Oki culture from others is their way of cooking. And I was curious, do Nebraskans have a particular way of cooking? Is there anything different?
Totally bland. Everything was totally bland. I don't think my mother even knew what garlic was. We didn't raise it. None of the farmers raised it. She didn't cook with it. Nothing was seasoned except for salt and pepper, period.
Mm-hmm.
None of
so
the spices.
So it's Midwestern.
Yes, I think so.
Preparing food then.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Just a bland, you know, mashed potatoes and with butter and salt and pepper.
What was the most common method of cooking? In Oki cooking, you fry everything.
we had plenty of. There was a lot of fried things, and a lot of things out of the oven. I won't go so far as to say casserole dishes because here again, I, you know. They just, things were served very plain, you know, you didn't mix things up together. But yes, a lot of fried things, and the potatoes were fried or boiled, and a lot of, my mother baked, she made a lot of things, she would make donuts, and made her own mincemeat and this type of thing. So she made her own pies. Probably most things were fried and baked. We had, of course, when we butchered, we'd have the roasts and that type of thing that would be in the oven. In the wintertime, of course, in the summertime, we didn't use the wood stove. We had some kind of a little, I guess it was a coal oil stove, which didn't have an oven, but it had little burners. It was a little narrow stove-like thing. And I think it probably was coal oil that they cooked on because it wasn't nearly as hot. Mm-hmm. So I expect everything was fried then because there was no oven and because it was so hot.
Yeah.
Hmm. And it seems odd that we would feel the difference in Bakersfield in the heat, because Nebraska is hot in the summer. And during the, in the middle of the summer, my sisters and my mother and I would go down in the cellar where it was nice and cool. And we had a cellar door that was open, and of course we had some kind of lamps hung down in there, coal oil lamps or some kind of self-contained lamps, which we used in storms. But we'd go in there, and my mother and my older sister would do embroidery work, fancy work. That's the way we spent a lot of our daytime summer hours. Mm-hmm. And now I can't reconcile how they had time to do that when there was so much going on the farm. It seemed like they worked so many hours, but I do remember being in the cool of the cellar in the heat of the day quite often.
When you came back to Bakersfield, you seemed to have a better view or more opportunity to meet what people would call Okies than you did the first time.
Right.
Could you tell me something about the hostility, the local hostility, toward the Okies at that time?
We laughed at them. We thought they were the scum of the earth. That they just no better than pigs. That was, I think that was prevalent. There was no charity, as I think back. And I don't know if I'm just, I don't think I'm just drawing on my own lack of charity in my nature, but that just, I think I don't know if we didn't want them there, or if they were just there and we just looked at them with ridicule and that type of thing. We were very uncharitable.
Did you ever encounter people who you knew were Okies? Say their accent gave them away. Oftentimes that does, but did have clean clothes, maybe not fancy clothes, but clean clothes, and seemed to be just like you or me or anybody else. Did you ever run into Okies of that sort?
Not that I recall, no. It seems to me that you recognized an Okie by the way he looked.
Mm-hmm. In which case, it's quite possible that a man from New York could look like a man from Oklahoma, and you might call that man from New York an Okie because he was dirty.
Yes, except like you say, the accent, they had that twang in their talk, that Midwest Okie twang. And it's very likely that there were some Okies who, like you say, were clean and just like we were, you know, very likely, but we just didn't recognize them or didn't put them in that class.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Some of them worked very hard to lose their accents, too.
I'm sure they did, yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So when they went in public places, banks or stores or schools, churches, places like that, do you think that people recognize them as being what they were and perhaps didn't treat them in the same way they would treat?
I would say definitely. That was my experience. Mm-hmm.
And did you have any other reason to think that these people were, say, undesirable, aside from the way they looked and the general stereotype of them being immoral or slovenly, that sort of thing? Did you ever have any experiences where they did things that were, that affronted you, or some reason to think that they were not?
No, I think, except for one instance, I'll tell you, but I think the fact that their children were always runny-nosed and just sort of left to shift for themselves. No personal experience, except when I was working in the bank, there was an exchange of money for one of the men had hired his wife out to one of the other workers, and there was an exchange of money in the form of a check, which went across my teller's counter at the bank, and we knew that's what it was because it was written right on the check. But other than that, no, I'm saying only from hearsay.
You're saying what I think you're saying.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right. Uh-huh. But other than that, we shouldn't have judged their morals. Mm-hmm. But of course, in retrospect, you can look back and say that. You know, they were a new breed, and they just we thought that they just didn't add anything to the community.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the sorts of things that people criticized them for? There was quite a to-do about the Okies using public health facilities, for instance. People didn't think it was right for them to go and use Kern General for free, and then have the Kern County taxpayers pay the bill.
No, I don't.
Do you remember hearing anything like
No.
Some other people didn't like them in their schools with the other white children.
There was that, because you felt like they were dirty and they'd contaminate you. Mm-hmm. There was that feeling.
They worried about head lice.
Right.
Things like
yeah.
That.
When you were around me, you always had this feeling like you wanted to draw your skirt up around tight so that you didn't come in physical contact with them. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a stereotype thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we just fed each other this type of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So well, I'm sure that much of it was totally unfair.
Mm-hmm. But when there are a few who are that way,
right,
it gives reason for a stereotype to
mm-hmm.
begin
mm-hmm.
in the first place. You had said you read The Grapes of Wrath?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that the stereotype that Steinbeck created there, you found to be true?
Very, very accurate. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think he, from what I had seen and heard, I think he hit it right on the head. I think it was an excellent representation.
The way they talked, for instance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And even the family unit, you know, like grandma and grandpa,
mm-hmm.
You know, I you didn't see that so much in other people, you know, but it was, they brought the old folks with them. I guess they couldn't leave them back there just to die, this type of thing. And I think he hit the nail right on the head from what I saw of the 1940 Okies in
mm-hmm.
Buttonwilla.
Then when World War II came, you were still living in Bakersfield?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you married about that time?
Yes. we were married just a month before Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did the war affect you? Was your husband in the service? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We were married in November, and Pearl Harbor was in December of 41. He was not drafted until June. And then he went to San Diego to Camp Callan for his basic, then went to Stuart, Florida. No, Ed, mm-hmm. You went in after Camp Callan. What did you do?
I went to Los Angeles.
Oh,
radio school.
Radio school, okay. And I stayed in Bakersfield and continued to work. And saw him on the weekends and when I could. Then from there you went to Florida,
mm-hmm.
Went to Stuart, Florida for 2 or 3 months or a little bit longer. Then to El Paso, Texas. And I went to Florida with him, lived with him there and didn't work. Came to El Paso, Texas with him. And then he went overseas to the Pacific area of combat and was gone for 3.5 years, and I came back to Bakersfield and went back to my job and worked until the war was over.
And you and your husband remained in Bakersfield then after the war? He came
back? Yes, until... How long were we in Bakersfield?
We stayed till 1951, until after David was born, remember, and then we went to San Diego.
All right, you came home in 40, you came back from the war in 46,
mm-hmm.
And from 46 to 51, and then we moved to San Diego.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk just a bit more about the Okies, we were talking about a few minutes ago. In 1935 or 1940, the word Okie was a pretty serious thing. I mean, if you called someone an Okie, that was a pretty serious accusation,
mm-hmm.
And many fights were fought over that.
Mm-hmm.
And it carried a connotation, as we've talked about, a dirty, slovenly person with loose morals or even no morals, and et cetera, et cetera. And do you think that connotation that it carries is the idea that Okie has changed over the years? If someone called someone else an Okie now, do you think that it would mean the same thing as it did back then?
No, I think the knowledge and the sting and the full implication is gone. For instance, yourself, you're so much younger. To you, Okie wouldn't be the insult that it was had you lived at the time then. If I were to call you, if someone had called me an Okie then, well, I'd have probably just beat the heck out of them, you know. Even in all your research, there's an intangible that is gone because the era is gone, and that firsthand, that energy, that negative energy is the best way I can describe it, is gone. And I can sit here and describe to you what it was like, but you don't get that negative, almost revulsion,
mm-hmm.
that we felt for them. Something else has come to mind about the Okies that I almost forgot. My mother changed her church affiliation this was after they went from San Diego back to Bakersfield. We're living out at Greenfield, and this would have been in about late 1940s. That's after the war. During the war and after the war. During the war, probably. And she joined a Pentecostal church, which were called the Holy Rollers. Those were basically immigrants, the Okies, with, I knew a lot of them. My, how the memories come back now. They were moral, Christian people who were, had come from Oklahoma, Arkansas, not as, not to follow the crops, but just came because there was nothing back there, and they came just like we did, but at a later time. And they were poor as could be, but they were moral people, clean people. Think of those slovenly people like Steinbeck wrote about, mm-hmm. and forgot the good people. My, that doesn't speak well for me, does it?
the rotten eggs stand out a lot more.
I guess that's
that's what sticks uh-huh. in anyone's mind uh-huh. about any people. That's why we have stereotypes about Mexicans, Italians, Dutch.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's stereotypes about everybody. And when World War II came and things changed for most people, did the stereotype of the Okie change? Do you think more of them prospered and perhaps brought themselves out of these poor circumstances they had in the late 30s? Or do you feel that the stereotype persisted?
I think
basically the same.
Some of them may have gotten jobs, but I think my thought would be that it was a culture that just sort of ran its course. I realize there still are the indigent Okies, but that particular culture, I think, and I don't know if the war had a bearing on it or not, I would be inclined to think that it would have in an indirect way, simply that everyone was more prosperous. Not that they necessarily went to work at a defense plant or this type of thing, but there was just a whole change in the economics and the attitude of people. We quit biting each other and tried to pull together for the good of the country. And I think perhaps we just sort of absorbed them. But I have no first-hand one-to-one mm-hmm. knowledge, so I'm just giving
you a
generalization.
If you wanted to hate an enemy, we had Japanese and
right.
Germans to hate, not Okies.
Right. We didn't. We weren't pickish. You know, we weren't nitpicking. Yeah, there was something greater, and those little things, those little irritations. We didn't have time for that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
Has your life changed a great deal since that time in the 30s? Do you feel like this is just a whole other world from the time you were in San Diego and
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Of course, a lot of it is maturing on my part because I've raised a family in the interim and everything. But it seems long ago and far away.
Mm-hmm. Are you glad you came to California?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Did mm-hmm. you ever have the inclination to go back to Nebraska?
Never. My sister, my older sister, went back, married, raised her family back there in poverty. And because that's where there was an old farm there that her husband inherited. But it was just a hand-to-mouth existence, and she's in her 70s now. She's retired. She's a widow. But she still lives in Franklin, and she doesn't want to come to California.
Mm-hmm. Do you think life is better here than it would have been had you stayed in Nebraska? You've got your sister as sort of an example.
Oh, yes,
that.
Yes, uh-huh, definitely. Yeah, it has been, but of course, once you grow up, You make your own life. Now, like, okay, let's say five of us came from an impoverished background in the Middle West. I am not well-to-do. We have enough. We have retirement. We own our home. My younger sister is quite well-to-do. She lives down in Sherman Oaks in Los Angeles. My brother, who lives in Bakersfield, is he wants to eat. It doesn't have very much. My sister in Nebraska has nothing. I think we all, personality-wise, whatever effect it had on us, whatever road it made us take, then we made our own life from it.
Mm-hmm. Your father's story, looking back on it now, sounds very sad.
It is to me when I think about it, too. Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. To both of them. And I think, even though my mother had, you know, worked and struggled and raised five, and it was hard. I mean, no baby food, you know, you ground your own baby food and this type of thing. Yet I think the burden falls on the man, just like it does in our society even today. The man has the responsibility. If somebody gets sick, it's his responsibility. He's got to keep that income coming in. Now, the wives work, I worked, and I enjoyed it, and I helped the family. And you're hired, you work. But when the chips are down, it's the man's responsibility nonetheless. And when you have children and you're not having an income, they carry that responsibility, and it must be terribly heavy, and I wouldn't trade places with the, I wouldn't be a husband for anything. So I see that in my father, the struggle, and always that worry, to make ends meet, to feed his five gaping little mouths and that type of thing. And yes, it's very sad.
Mm-hmm. How many children did you have?
We had two. We have a boy and a girl.
Could you tell me a little bit about them?
Yes, my boy is very sick. You mean now or in their growing up years?
Right now.
Doing? Yes, my boy is a junior executive. He's very successful. He's 30 years old. He's with Hewlett Packard in the Bay Area. He has one son who is 10. His wife works. They're, shall I say, a normal young couple. He has a lot of potential. He was a straight A student through college. He served a term in the Navy during the Vietnam War. I have one son, and he had a low draft number and would have been drafted. And I said, I will send you to Canada. I was working for an orthodontist. I said, I will get doctor to put braces on your teeth so they won't draft you. I said, you are my only son, and I do not want to see you go to that war. And my son said, no way. He said, that is my responsibility. I will not shirk it. So rather than being drafted, he joined the Navy and served his term in the Navy.
Mm-hmm. Then he go to college after he was out of the Navy?
Yes, then he went to college after that. My daughter is, I can't describe her to you. She's an artist. Everything you see around here is hers. In any media, she's a free spirit. She's a child of nature. She's in the holistic medicine. She has just married and gone She married in December. She's 27. She kept going to college to get a degree, but such a free spirit and life was such fun that she would take out a year to do this and a year to work on the John Muir Trail high in the mountains, and a year to last summer she went to up to Nevada City and cooked health food for at a Quaker school for a company that was teaching how to build your own home. She's done a little bit of everything. Life to her is just one big abundant love affair. She rushes forward for every challenge. A real warm, sweet person. And she met this young man up at the Cotati, which is up by Sonoma State. He was in body therapy, what they call postural integration, doing that work, and she went to one of his classes, met him, fell in love with him, married him. In the summertime, he goes back to Maine where he has property, and they harvest kelp during the summer and sell it to the health food stores. And in probably this winter, then along about October, they'll come back out here, and he can teach this body therapy, massage, and healing work is what they do. He and she can both teach it out here, which is probably what they'll do.
This. You sound like you're pretty happy with both your kids.
Yes, I feel very blessed, very, very, very fortunate, yes.
Uh-huh. And things have come a long way from your father's despondency when he was on the WPA in the late 30s to kids graduating from college and
yes.
going out on their own.
Yes, I should say so. That's, like I say, it's just a whole different world, yes. Mm-hmm.